until he comes on.
Log Talk Radio.
Hello, hi everybody. Welcome to Travel Advice. Hi.
Hello.
Are you looking for travel advice in your next travels? Join Chris and Jerry and get the ideas you need for your next trip. Today is March 5th, 2007, and today's show is about Africa. We're giving advice about Africa. And my co-host Jerry. How you doing, Jerry?
Hi. How are you?
Hi.
Yeah,
oh,
really
doing.
Excited. I'm excited about this. Because Africa is my favorite continent in the world.
Is there, so large. Yeah, there's so much to see in Africa, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought, first of all, we might start out with West Africa, which is my favorite part of Africa. But many people don't go there because, number one, it's centuries behind, practically, the rest of Africa. The infrastructure, the roads, the airlines, in many of the countries, it's just really quite pathetic. But it's so important on West Africa to go with more money than you think you'll need, because it does cost a lot of money. And because of the price of water, for example, and the price of everything, the food. And also it takes more time than you might think it's going to take. The transportation over there is just bizarre because, number one, the presidents sometimes just take the airlines from you. You'll go out to the airport, get on your aircraft, and the airlines will just say, I'm sorry, this plane's booked. And the president comes out, and he takes it, and he flies off to a conference or something. So as a result, you never know if your plane's going to go. And that's in countries like Guinea-Bissau and Sierra Leone and these kinds of countries. And there's also a fabulous way of traveling from point A to point B within the countries, and that's called taxis. Now, they have normal taxis, such as we have everywhere else in the world, within cities, but they have taxis that go point A to point B. And they will start usually in the marketplace, and they will wait until they fill up. They hold about 7 passengers, and it could be 1 hour, it could be 3 days. But when they get the 7 passengers, then off they go point A to point B just as fast as they can, and generally nonstop. So you need to really know about those if you're going to do some independent traveling, because it's a very viable option. One thing I learned many, many years ago is, and it's cheap, really cheap, is that you just, when you get there and you need 3 more people, for example, just pay for the extra people. It gives you more room, and they don't understand that usually, but just go ahead and pay for the extra people. And in other words, if you need 3 people and it's $15, pay them your $15 plus $45 more for those 3, and off you go. You have to convince them. Have you been to West Africa, Chris?
I haven't, actually. It's on my number one to-do list, though. I really want to – I've met a lot of people from West Africa, actually. I've met a lot of people from Togo and Nigeria, you know, and all around that area.
Well, I tell you, Togo is one of my favorite countries on earth.
It is
really? Definitely in the top 10. Yes. In a little bitty country that's about the size of a lot of people's living rooms, I mean, it is so small. It's just 15 miles or 20 miles wide and maybe 100 miles long, something
oh
like
God.
That. And you go all the way from beautiful, fantastic beaches to mountains and waterfalls and deserts, the Sahara Desert at the top of it, and all kinds of food and peoples and languages, the local languages. And it's just spectacular. It's almost in some areas like a miniature Switzerland. That's really not quite the truth, but for Africa, it definitely is. And you can find just everything you want there. I also love Mali. It's one of my favorite countries on earth also, is Mali.
Oh, yeah. Is that where Timbuktu is?
It is Timbuktu, and there really is such a place as Timbuktu.
Oh, yeah.
It's bizarre. The first time I ever went there, maybe 35 years ago, you had to fly into Timbuktu and or take the boat down the Niger River. It only operates certain times of the year when the river is higher. But there is such a place, and it is dirty. It is awful. It is something else. But it's well worth it. And I think that's why people said, we'll send you to Timbuktu, because it is definitely a real place and middle of nowhere. But the Dogon tribe out of Mopti, are phenomenal, one of the most interesting tribes in all of Africa. And you can go into the desert part, most of the country is desert, but you can go really into the desert out of Gao, G-A-O, and head on a track. They have a track that goes all the way over to Bamako, the capital, and you go through this desert, very rural, very primitive, and you can take trips on it, but you must book them in long term advance, and it's kind of scary because you're in the middle of nowhere, but it's fabulous. I love that country of the passion.
Yeah, I heard, you know, one thing about Africa is this, like, when you go there, a lot of people speak English or French, right, in that region mm-hmm. there. Like, so if you know English or French, you can kind of try to, you can get by fairly well, I think, you know.
In every country in Africa, with minor exceptions, there will be people that speak either French or English. And in the larger cities, you'll find French and English. But in some countries in the rural areas, you'll only find the French that were French countries, like Cote d'Ivoire and many of the West African countries were French. And they will speak a basic French. Many people will, and they can get by in it. And some speak it well. But yeah, you don't need Spanish except in the northern part in one or two minor areas. But you definitely need French and English if you're really going to do Africa. So that's basically West Africa. I mean, each of those countries. Well, the Gambia. The Gambia is where Roots, that movie and the book, Roots, took place.
Oh, Roots. Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's where that book started, and it came across over to the Americas. And there's a place in an island off of Dakar in Senegal. It's called Ile de Gorée, and this island is phenomenal. It is one of the most interesting museums on Earth. It is where they crammed, and I mean crammed, hundreds of thousands, tens and tens of thousands of slaves waiting to get on ships to come to the Americas. And it is horrible the way they jammed them in there so tight they had to stand and die and starve and be crunched. And it was just horrible. But it's well worth a visit. If you're ever in Senegal, go over to Dakar, the capital, and take the little ferry over to Ile Gorée. It's a phenomenal experience. Mm-hmm. And we won't spend any time, I don't think, talking about North Africa. I mean, if anybody's interested, they can call in, and we'll talk about North Africa. But that's another world away. I mean, even though it borders the Sahara, it is definitely Arab. And French and Arab and a bit of English over like in Egypt. But most of those countries are French and Arab, and the Muslim countries. And very interesting, very fascinating, but we won't spend time on them because I don't consider them Africa. I consider them Mediterranean because there's nothing African about them, in my opinion, strictly Mediterranean. But let's spend some time in Central Africa. Some people don't want to go to Central Africa because of the malaria and because of the governments, like the two Congos and Central African Republic and Chad. I mean, these countries can be very, very dangerous, and for good reason that you don't want to go there because you can die. You can be killed, imprisoned, die from maybe dysentery, all kinds of things. I have been to every one of those countries and absolutely love them. The only one I've never been to is Equatorial Guinea, and I've never wanted to go. Everyone says it's one of the worst ones there, so I've never bothered. But there are some beautiful, wonderful countries like Cameroon. Cameroon is magnificent beyond description, and Americans and most travelers throughout the world have never really heard of Cameroon, and I really recommend that if you're ever going to Africa that you research it and call Travel Advice if you want or email us or whatever you want. That will tell you about Cameroon because it's magnificent beyond description. I mean, so many different sceneries from jungles and mountains and deserts and all kinds of different tribes and cultures and foods and fabulous, and it's friendly, and it's really very safe as a rule. There's no such thing as 100% safe in anywhere in the world, but Africa especially, because it is it's a growing continent, and it's very much alive. Another place that you may want to consider going, not that you were intelligent to do it, but is Chad. Now, Chad is a place that you'll probably die. I mean, it's a dangerous place to go to, but they have Lake Chad there. And the only reason that I have been to Chad is to go to Lake Chad. And this is where the same reed boats, the same design, reed, everything, as they have at Lake Titicaca in Bolivia and Peru in South America. And Thor Heyerdahl, when he did the Kon-Tiki, they come across the Atlantic, he got his idea of how to build the boats there in Chad, at Lake Chad, and he used the Chad people to help him build these boats as he left Morocco.
So, it looks like we have a call here, Jerry. Our guest here. Okay.
Hello, it's
Hello.
Chris Bradshaw calling. Sorry, I wasn't able to get through initially, but I'm here with you now.
Oh, great. Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Hi, I'm Chris, one of the co-hosts, and here's Jerry. How you doing? Hi.
Hi, Jerry. Sorry about being late, but I'm available now to answer any questions or to talk about anything that you haven't talked about so far.
Well, oh, great. Thank you.
Waiting for you, talking about West Africa and Central Africa.
About
Chad and Cameroon and Mali and Senegal and some of those countries. And we're waiting for you to come on board. And listeners, this is Chris Bradshaw. He is. Are you president or what did you?
Yes, that's my
president?
My formal title is president of Wild Africa Safaris.
Yes, and it's in Vancouver. And I use Chris practically exclusively for my travels to Africa. He did my trip to Kilimanjaro and Egypt, and he has done many, many trips. For many clients we recommend because he is phenomenal. His prices are extremely competitive, and they can do almost anything you want in 90% of Africa. And so, Chris, what would you like to start out with?
Well, thank you very much for that, Jerry. It's always a pleasure dealing with you and arranging your trips. You certainly have some wonderful ideas of the different kind of things that you want to do. And that was sort of what I was wanting to talk to you about and your listeners, because Africa is an amazing place, really, for the variety of unique things that one can do there. It certainly is a continent that most people that I've ever spoken to have got a desire of some sort. The dreaming of going to Africa is a very common thing, and certainly a lot of people have a distinct impression of what they're going to see and do when they go there. And often they find that it's quite different to what they imagined, different in a good way, that it lives up to any expectations that they have. And it is truly an amazing destination for all types of people, from young to old, for adventurers, for people who like things a little bit more sedate. But I'll talk to you a little bit, I think, about some of the unique things that have struck me over the years that I like to share with people. There are places in, for example, the famous safari destinations of Kenya and Tanzania. Those are amongst my favorite areas to go to because of the huge amount of wildlife. I think most people have probably heard of the Serengeti Plains, the Ngorongoro Crater, the Masai Mara. Those are all wonderful places to go, and the migration of the wildlife, wildebeest and zebra, that takes place every year. Basically, it's a movement, a circular movement that travels from the Masai Mara area down to the southern Serengeti and then back up again to the Masai Mara plains. So if you're wanting to see huge concentrations of wildlife, that's a fantastic area to go to, and particularly if you're wanting to see these large herds of animals, and I'm talking about millions of animals moving.
Oh, I know. When would you recommend they do that? What time of year is best?
Well, the principal times that you've got movement are sort of October, November time, late October. Of course, it's not set to a calendar. It depends very much on rains and things, but they're generally moving out of the northern part of the Serengeti in about sort of late September, October, and into November. And they make their way down to the southern part of the Serengeti and generally they're there by about January, and that's when they have their young. So if you're very interested in seeing a lot of young wildlife, and of course, unfortunately, the circle of life and nature, there's a lot of predator action at that time because the predators are going after the young animals, young wildebeest and zebra. And then the migration typically starts to move principally again sort of April, May, June, July. They're heading back up into the Masai Mara in big herds to get up into the Masai Mara typically in about August. So August, October, November, those are very good times, or the massed herds in the southern Serengeti in sort of January to March.
Okay.
So those are times that I really recommend, and something unique, which although it's done every day, is unique to every person who does it, is a hot air balloon safari over the plains of the Serengeti, and to see those herds, huge herds of animals, moving from the silence of a hot air balloon is just one of the most incredible things that you can do.
It is bizarre, isn't it?
Well, yes.
I've done it about five times over the Serengeti in my life, and it's one of the most exciting experiences, isn't it?
Well, I'm looking forward to doing it again in about April, May this year. I'm going on a short safari to East Africa, and we'll be doing a hot air balloon ride with safari with my family. And we're all very excited about doing that as a family. And that's the nice thing about Africa is that it can be done as a family.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of that train ride between Nairobi and Mombasa that was in the movie Out of Africa and has been around forever?
Oh, yes. Yes, that's a very well-known train journey. It goes through some wonderful wildlife areas, the Tsavo Park between Nairobi and Mombasa, or the other way around. Mm-hmm. We've had a few problems with it. I think the service levels have dropped, unfortunately, a bit on it in the last few years. We have some safety concerns, so much sort of safety from the point of view of armed attacks or anything like that. Nothing as dramatic as that. But just the maintenance of the line and things has been brought into question a few times.
And you don't recommend it now?
Beg your pardon?
You don't recommend it now?
I think for the real adventurous person who knows what they're getting into, it's still a fabulous thing to do to wake up in the early morning and go through these game-rich areas. It's still a unique thing to do, but I don't think it's for everybody. I would really sort of talk to people more specifically about it if they expressed an interest and find out exactly what they wanted to get out of it.
What is the best way, do you think, to see Kenyan, where to stay and things like that, if you want something really Kenyan and unique?
Well, there are a number of ways of doing it. Obviously, the old traditional style of going by vehicle from game reserve to game reserve. But my favorite way, and increasingly at Wild Africa Safaris, we find that people are wanting to maximize the amount of time that they have outside of the travel time between places. And the roads, frankly, can be awful in parts of East Africa. So to fly into some of these areas from Nairobi or between the game reserves is a great way to get around, and convenient, very, very quick, and then you're in the area that you want to be in. Mm-hmm. And we do really enjoy putting people in some of these smaller lodges, often family-run. Some of them have been in families as ranches and things for many, many years. Mm. Down in the Masai Mara area, for example, there's the Rakero camp, which is only 7 tents. It's run by a family, and that family have been on that land for generations, you know, 4 or 5 generations now. And they're really one with the community. You get all the wildlife that you would in the Masai Mara itself, because, you know, the animals don't are not fenced in, so they literally travel throughout that whole area in search of good grass and vegetation to feed on. Mm-hmm. But to have somebody who's lived on that land and to virtually bring you into their home is a really unique thing to do. I get such good feedback from people who go on that kind of trip. And that's just one example. There are many of them spread around throughout Kenya. You've got places like the Laikipia area, which is Cookie Gullman, I Dreamed of Africa. People have probably heard about that. That was a movie with Kim Basinger a few years ago. And she, Cookie Gullman, Italian originally, she has this conservancy up in a remote part of the northern part of Kenya, and she has a fantastic vision for that area, and again is virtually hands-on with a lot of what you do in her conservancy area, and wonderful wildlife, and also the interaction with the local tribespeople, very, very interesting sort of interaction, and that's also what East Africa can give you a lot of, is the Maasai, the Samburu, are people that do very much still live the way that they've lived for generations or hundreds of years in some cases.
Let me ask you a question about Tanzania.
Yes.
I know I've been going to Tanzania back in the days when it's called Tanzania.
Yes.
And then it changed to Tanzania. And I know originally when it was Tanzania, and then
Tanganyika.
Yes. Yes. I'm sorry. I'm still asleep, I guess. But yeah, Tanganyika, and then when it first became Tanzania, or Tanzanian, it was very dangerous to go to. Do you find it dangerous now?
No, not at all. Tanzania is a very stable country. It had many years where it was, I won't say cut off from the rest of the world, but they had a strong sort of African socialism going in Tanzania, and they weren't really that interested in the fact that they had these unique places, World Heritage sites like the Ngorongoro crater, which really people wanted to visit, but there weren't the facilities at all. And in the last 5 or 6 years, perhaps slightly longer, they've opened up tremendously, but still relatively small numbers of lodges in huge areas. So you don't have quite the mass of tourism, if I can put it that way, as you can have sometimes in places like the Maasai Mara, where there's many, many lodges and camps. It's a wonderful area, gorgeous area. Mm-hmm. I still love it a lot, and I'm going there on this trip that I'm doing in April, May. But Tanzania, 7 or 8 lodges in you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of acres of a game reserve, and so you do get a much more individualized experience. They put a lot of road of money into their infrastructure, so roads and hotels, lodges have been built, but they've kept it sort of reasonably high cost, low impact tourism. So they haven't sort of gone overboard with it, and really it is one of my favorite destinations. And you can combine the game reserves and things with Zanzibar, of course, which is part of the Federation of Tanganyika and Zanzibar. And so you can finish off with a beautiful beach-type holiday, relaxing in Zanzibar, which has an amazing history as well, as you probably know, Jerry.
I know, and the neat thing about Zanzibar, most people only really know Zanzibar from, like, the Bob Hope, Bing Crosby.
Oh, yes.
And or they hear about how dangerous it was back in the 1600s because of the pirates and stuff.
Yes.
Smuggling and stuff. But I love Zanzibar. It is still very rustic and primitive in many ways, but it does have some fabulous hotels.
Yes, it does. It does, really.
The beaches are wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so much history a lot of Middle Eastern Arabic kind of influences there as well, because it was ruled by the Omani sultans from Oman for generations, and so a lot of their influences are there, with places like Stone Town, which again is a World Heritage Site, narrow little streets, not wide enough for more than a donkey to go through them.
You think you're going through Old Jerusalem or something?
Yes, that's right. That's right. Absolutely.
Now, I wanted to ask you a question about Namibia and Botswana. We only have about 5 more minutes left, but on Namibia and Botswana, which are some of my favorite places in the world,
yes.
How do you think is the best way for people to travel that area?
Well, again,
options?
There are huge amounts of options, and again, that's part of the wonderful variety that Africa has. Right. You've got a place like Botswana, which has some very unique areas. It's a huge country. Most of it is the Kalahari Desert, but you have this unique feature of the Okavango River, which deltas basically into the Kalahari Desert. It still flows into what was a prehistoric lake, but now is just the Kalahari Desert. And so you have this wonderful waterway in the middle of the desert. Again, very remote, wild areas, most of them only accessible by light aircraft, but huge conservancies and concessions that only allow 20 people in them at any one time. And so that's a wonderful area to go to. Also up on the Chobe River, you have the famous Chobe Game Reserve, which is one of the most famous and incredible game reserves, where in the dry season, which is typically our summer period here in North America, is their dry season down there, so July, August, September time, you have huge concentrations of elephants in very small areas because they're coming from the drier inland areas to the river, the Chobe River, to drink and to eat. So you can almost get tired of elephants at times because you just see so many of them. It's an incredible sight.
Well, the one thing we've discovered that a lot of people are amazed at is because most people think because it's summer down there, because, you know, December, January, February, and all that is their summer, but that's the time to go to Botswana and Namibia.
It's what they call their green season, because if there's going to be some rain, it'll be at that time. But bear in mind, of course, that it is a desert area, and so what rain they do get is not very much, and it really doesn't interfere a lot with the wildlife. Most of the water that comes into Botswana comes in through rivers that start in the Angolan Highlands or up in Zambia, and then gather water as they go and then eventually flow out into the Okavango Delta or into the Chobe River. So, rain is not a problem in those parts, and it's also the quieter and cheaper time to go. People haven't really discovered how good it is to go to Botswana in January and February, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Namibia is also, if we have a couple of minutes there to talk about Namibia, you've got this huge, fantastic country with the most amazing desert landscapes and scenery. The Namib Desert, for example, is one of the oldest deserts in the world, and some areas have no recorded rainfall in sort of living memory, which is quite an incredible thing to think about. A lot of the moisture comes in there from fogs off the Atlantic, the South Atlantic Ocean. You have these amazing sand dune formations, oryx or gemsbok, as they're called in that part of the world, the antelope with the long straight horns. You contrast that with going up into the Atosha area, which again is a fantastic game reserve.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Huge big salt pan, springs along the southern border of this huge salt pan, which at certain times of the year, again, very dry climate there, are the only water for hundreds of kilometers around, and they literally the animals are congregated, and it's not unusual to see dozens and dozens of different species of animals all sort of trying to get to what little water there is in these areas.
Well, Chris, our time is up. Can you believe it?
Well, it's gone very quickly, and I'm sorry that I was so late in joining you, but I'm glad that I've been able to be here.
Yes, and we definitely will invite you back, because we'd love to continue with the rest of Africa.
Yes, there's so much more. There's many, many other countries.
Well, this is Chris Bradshaw with Wild Africa Safaris, and do contact him, because as you can see, he and his staff are phenomenal when it comes to Africa, and they'll give you a fabulous thing.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Thanks. Bye, Chris. Bye, Jerry.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, and talk to you soon. And thank you, Jerry. Have a great week there. Okay.
Thank you. You too.
Okay.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.